As muddled as memories can become the further you get from them when you're trying to remember certain things, there are certain other things I've discovered, however, that remain very vivid, which means they leave a lasting impact. A camping trip I took with my scout troop in the summer of 1961 is one such memory. Each summer, our scoutmaster, Mr. Roberts, took our troop on a week-long camping trip in an area of a national forest in southern West Virginia. By the summer of 1961, having reached the ripe old knowledgeable age of 16, I was among the older guys in the troop. We developed a certain kind of been there, done that swagger to our step that we used to impress upon the younger guys who were maybe coming along on some of their first trips. We would devise these little tricks and whatever to make sure that they knew who they were dealing with. And sitting around the fire one night, we older guys were ones who began urging Mr. Roberts to tell us some of his war stories. Jim Roberts, who's always Mr. Roberts to us no matter what our age, was a Marine combat veteran of the Korean War, the first hot war in the Cold War that set in after World War II. On some of our camping trips, he would tell a story or two about being in that conflict, and they were mostly in a lighthearted vein, having to do with the bad food they had to eat, or about some of the more colorful characters that were in his platoon. So our requests for stories that night were kind of along the lines of, tell us about that time in Korea when such and such happened. This was yet another way for us to show off to the younger guys just how hip we were. We even knew some of the scoutmaster's war stories. And since we weren't all that far removed from games of playing army, we were pretty impressed to have a troop leader who had fought a real, honest to goodness, war. Well, Mr. Roberts was in an obliging mood. He started off in an easygoing manner, repeating some of the more humorous episodes that we'd heard before. But the more he talked, the more sober sounding he became. And those of us who thought we'd heard them all began to realize he was going in a direction he hadn't gone before. And his stories became ones about having to walk on seemingly endless marches when he said the only thing that kept him going was seeing the legs of the guy in front of him walking along as well. He talked of the fear of not knowing if he would even live to see another day, of how at night the shape of a tree or a bush took on the appearance of a North Korean fighter getting ready to kill him. He told of a buddy stepping on a landmine not too far from where he had just been walking and getting blown to bits. It seemed like something had clicked in Mr. Roberts' mind. He decided, well, you guys want some war stories? I'll give you some real war stories. And I remember we began to get a little scared. And it wasn't the kind of scared you get when you're telling ghost stories around a campfire, because then you actually want to be scared. You enjoy being scared. This was a different kind of fear. We were scared because we were seeing a side of our scoutmaster we hadn't seen before, and we were hearing about a side of war we'd never been exposed to before. The fear was of not knowing where he was taking us, or where or how these stories were going to end. Mr. Roberts, however, was a very responsible, trustworthy leader. And I guess at some point he caught himself and realized he'd gotten in a little deeper on this war story business than he had really meant to. So he very quickly finished up with whatever episode he was recounting and then just said, I think that's enough for the night, guys. But none of us got up to leave because we didn't want to go walking back into the dark where our tents were. So we sat there for a few seconds and then Mr. Roberts said, okay, let's stand up and have a word of prayer. Word of prayer. Our ex-Marine war combat veteran was asking us to stand up and pray. Mr. Roberts, however, again, was not someone to argue with. We stood up and bowed our heads. He kept it short and to the point, asking God that no more such wars would ever have to be fought. He further prayed that none of us standing there would ever have to live through the kinds of experiences he just described. And then we went off to bed. 2 years later, I was off to college. My scouting days were over. I don't recall in that short amount of time that I was still with that troop that we ever asked for any more war stories. I've long lost track of most of the guys who were on that particular trip, but I know what happened to at least two of them. One was killed in Vietnam when a bulldozer he was operating to clear a road through a jungle flipped over on him. His name was Warden Taylor. His name is on the black granite wall. Another lost his legs in battle in the same conflict. His name is Gary Leck. Mr. Roberts' short prayer was one of the more earnest and heartfelt ones I've ever heard. And it was offered even as the embryonic stages of yet another war were developing and it would take its terrible toll as well. It would, in fact, reach clear into that circle of us who stood around a fire on a clear summer night during our teenage years. As I said, I was off to school a couple years later. And from there, I was on to theological school. Owing to the deferments that I was eligible for, and which I had very mixed feelings about, I was never called for military service in the most divisive war with respect to public opinion in which this country has ever engaged. And I think I can say that including this current war, since public opinion has largely turned against it, even as it continues unabated. So I was spared the kind of terrors that my one-time scoutmaster related. I only know these terrible realities secondhand, which is probably not to know much about them at all. It was only a few years after this, though, that I did stand for another prayer for peace, one that was offered during the Vietnam War. I told this story before, so I'll keep it very short here. This one was offered by Dr. Martin Luther King in February of 1968 near the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier in Washington, D.C., in Arlington National Cemetery, for a gathering of an organization called Clergy and Laity concerned about Vietnam. So think about that. Jim Roberts and Martin Luther King. I think about being led in prayer by both men and how each of their prayers has left an impression on me. The modern-day prophet that Dr. King was, praying for peace on earth, and a combat veteran who'd seen war up close and personal, praying that future generations would be spared what he had seen and experienced. The visionary for peace on the one hand, and someone who provided a sobering reminder of how far short of that vision we as a human family still are. And I feel gratitude towards both of these men. For I search and I yearn for and continue to work for the fulfillment of our fifth Unitarian Universalist principle that seeks the goal of world community, peace, liberty, and justice for all, while also being deeply mindful of the lives that continue to be sacrificed because of our human failings across the globe to attain this goal. So now we come to Veterans Day 2007, observed on this very day, the 11th day of the 11th month. Even the name is tragically telling. This day was originally called Armistice Day. It was originally meant to celebrate the end of a war that was supposed to end all wars, World War I. Instead, it has become a time and a day to honor the lives of our fellow countrymen and women that have been lost in all of the wars since we engaged in World War I. I guess I could dwell on the irony of that for a time, but don't feel that I need to. It speaks for itself. Neither do I need to point out that Veterans Day 2007 comes in the midst of what I feel is one of the most senseless and ill-conceived wars in which we have ever engaged. My opposition to this has been pretty clear, this particular war has been pretty clear from the outset. While my frustration over it is not lessened in any way, I'm going to largely set that aside this morning. But what I want to offer instead are a few observations on what I think our thoughts and offerings should be for the men and women engaged in this conflict, whatever our feelings about it may be. Men and women, probably all of whom were not even born at the time the story I opened up with happened, but who are now living their own version of some of those stories I heard almost 50 years ago. Well, first and foremost, I feel they should receive our respect and honor and support for the decision they have made to serve their country by serving in the military. A corollary I would add to that is that I do not believe that we should be foisting upon them our need for heroes and heroines. That thought came to me this past week as I finally got around to reading a short book called I'm a Soldier Too, the Jessica Lynch story. It's been over 4 years now since this young woman from a small and rather isolated West Virginia town, which is about 50 miles from the one where I was raised, it's been about a little over 4 years now since she was rescued by American forces from an Iraqi hospital where she was being held as a prisoner of war by Iraqi insurgents, and where even under those circumstances, Iraqi doctors most likely saved her life. On March the 23rd of 2003, in the very first weeks of our invasion of Iraq, the army armored vehicle she was riding in came under heavy attack. Ms. Lynch was severely, almost mortally wounded and taken prisoner. She will probably never completely and fully recover from the wounds she received. Then a few weeks later, she was rescued, very dramatic, bravely executed rescue by American commandos. And it was right at that time also that the Pentagon spin machine went into overdrive. And a little lady from Palestine, West Virginia, became a female Rambo. Remember, the war was only a few weeks old at that point, about a month old at that point, and had a good level of public support at that time, and so a good war story could only enhance that support. And so the first round of stories following Ms. Lynch's rescue were about how she had bravely fought back against the insurgents, killing several of them with an automatic rifle before she was wounded and taken prisoner herself. Well, the time eventually came, though, when she was able to tell her own story. And it was Jessica Lynch herself who set the record straight by saying she'd never even gotten off a shot because her rifle jammed. And once the vehicle she was in got hit, she remembered nothing until coming to in a makeshift hospital. She then went on to say in light, and these are her words, "I was used as a symbol to show the war was going great. It doesn't bother me anymore, but it used to." All I can add to that is to say, God bless this plucky young woman from my own home state, who at the age of 21 refused to let herself become a cog in a war propaganda machine. She called the bluff of those who wanted her to be something other than who or what she was, which I think was a real act of bravery in and of itself. And I don't seem to recall Mr. Limbaugh calling Jessica Lynch a phony soldier because of her truth-telling. I guess, giving him some credit here, he's smart enough to know when he can get away with his cowardly name-calling and when he can't. As Ms. Lynch also says in the book, the reason she joined the service in the first place, in addition to truly wanting to serve her country, was so she could move beyond the setting in which she was raised, a setting that she dearly loved on the one hand, while also wanting more out of life for herself on the other. And as I know quite literally where she came from, I can relate quite well to that. She wanted to earn enough money. She grew up in a very impoverished town. And she wanted to earn enough money and become eligible for enough benefits so she could eventually go to college and become a kindergarten teacher. And while the attention she's received will no doubt help move her towards these goals, she neither asked for nor desired to be the fulfillment of a public need for wartime heroes. She only wanted to be respected and honored for who and what she was. I am a soldier. Another thing, those now serving in the military and who have been called into combat deserve of us is to simply know that we care. Again, whatever our opinions on the war may be. There are any number of ways of doing this. One very simple one came my way a couple of days ago from one of our members, Miriam Swanson. Some of you may have seen this. It was on our church website. It went over one of our email lists. The Walter Reed Army Medical Hospital in the upcoming holiday season will receive greeting cards and notes of appreciation from recovering soldiers there, from anyone who wishes to send it. If you didn't get it over the website, I put that address on our involvement table over in the dining room. I hope you'll respond. The next point should go without saying, but apparently needs to be said nonetheless. Veterans of any war are deserving of a basic level of care and fairness in this country as they return from fighting on its behalf. An article in last Wednesday's New York Times reported that one-fourth of the homeless persons in this country are veterans, with many of them in need of mental health care that they're not getting in adequate measure. And just this past Friday came stories of a Senate committee hearing that will be held to assure that National Guard members who are called to active duty will get their jobs when they return back home. By law, these jobs are supposed to be available for them upon their return, but owing to such a law not being enforced, a number of guardsmen are coming home after risking their lives to find themselves unemployed. I would hope the call to support the troops extends to those who have rightfully done their duty, although sadly enough, that does not always appear to be the case. One final thing I'll suggest that the men and women serving in this war deserve from us is our simply listening to those of them who do wish to speak their mind and speak of their experiences. I more or less stumbled across a website about a week or so ago that was set up to provide an outlet for soldiers returning from Iraq and Afghanistan to post messages and their thoughts. It was instituted in large part by Gary Trudeau, the author of the Doonesbury comic strip. And I put the web address on the information table along with the Walter Reed address if you want to write it down and give it a look. As you can probably imagine, there's a wide range of thought and opinion and experience related on that site. And one that I was particularly struck by was from a returning soldier from a small town in Texas. His name is Alex Fortune. And this was posted not even 2 weeks ago, on October the 30th. These are Mr. Horton's words. The nature of this war, he's referring to Iraq, the nature of this war prevents the public from a full grasp of understanding. In the wars of past generations, soldiers volunteered or were drafted by the millions. In the case of World War II, families endured rations and donated to the war effort. Almost every single American contributed to victory. In the case of Iraq and Afghanistan, the war is squeezed into a half hour of primetime television. In World War II, we were a country at war. Now we're a military at war. Unless you have a friend or family member in the military, it's a separate reality. In airports and living rooms, you can see for yourself the effect in the eyes of a soldier who has been at war for 15 months at a time hidden behind a smile that conceals a secret you'll never understand. And then Mr. Horton adds these words. Like Atlas, we carry the immense burden of a country on our shoulders, waiting for the day, seemingly long in the future, when the American people will say, that will do. Waiting for the day when the American people say, that will do. Well, if most opinion polls on the subject are anywhere near accurate, and if you read the 06 elections with any kind of accuracy as well, the American people in large measure have already said, that will do, when it comes to the current war in which we are entangled. Even as some of those who took us into it now seem to be angling for a do-over in Iran. Mr. Horton is surely right when he says there are things about his experience that I'll never understand, shielded from them, as I know I have been, and as most of us have been as well. So speaking only for myself now, one of the ways I want to continue to support and thank the Alex Hortons and the Jessica Lynches who are still in uniform and still at war is to keep finding ways of saying that will do until the message is finally and fully heard and finally and fully acted upon. This in closing. Even as we struggle with things as they are, we must still keep our eyes and our minds and our hearts focused as well on things as they may yet be. The writer of the book of Proverbs tells us that where there is no vision, the people perish. As we honor those who have fought and died in battle, we must not allow our spirits to perish and die for lack of a vision. A vision of the day when, however strange of a dream it may sound, the day when the dawn of peace in all its splendor over all the world is sown. Those words are found in our closing hymn. It's number 139. Wonders still the world shall witness. Let's sing that together.